You're listening to the MGO Blog Roundtable on WTKA, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is recorded, however, so if you call in, they'll think you're weird.
Back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050, WTKA online at WTKA.com. We're live here inside the Emden Studios. 9 o'clock hours every Thursday for years. How many years, guys?
Too many.
basically, this is the 11th year, more or less, because we've been doing
it.
Wow. I'm pretty sure. So it started.
That is incredible.
So it started, Sam, my second week on the job, you were on vacation, and I had Brian in, and it came out of that. So
I think it was a couple years before we did it every week, though.
So it's been a few years less than that, but it started. That was the beginning of it, but so maybe 9 years. That's still close to a decade.
And Dave Nasternak said we did 46 shows in the last year.
Yeah, we did. We had like baseball, and then we had Beeline Leaving, so it was like there wasn't much of a
reason to keep going.
Yeah, you were off basically July. Yeah.
Speaking of Dave, I need to defend your wife's honor, because he told me that he was there for this conversation that you claim he said that we were all terrible slobs, and that's not what she said at all.
So Craig claims that his wife said he's going in to hang out with a bunch of hobos.
I said she actually, her exact words were
no. Dave said you said that
hobo convention is what she said. So I'm figuring I'm pretty GQ.
So you're assigning guilt when you're the guilty party.
Yeah. That's what's going on.
Yeah. All right,
no,
Craig.
No, it's not.
All right. Well, you know the voices, Craig Ross, the venerable one as I call him, author of Michigan books,
stuff,
and a lawyer.
Yeah.
Your next book will come out
when Seth
sometime,
gets it together. I've finished
and it's about
it.
Something, it's and it a, has a title that is something as well?
Yeah, I think the title right now is Football When Dinosaurs Walked the Earth. It's about Michigan football and football in general prior to 1900. I think it's pretty funny because the stuff that happened then was pretty funny. And so Seth is supposedly working on it, and he can take his time. I'm not hassling you, Seth. I don't care. So yeah, that's what's
going
on.
He just brings it up every week on the radio.
Well, you ask me about what I'm doing because I need some predicate for legitimacy.
Okay.
Because otherwise, why am I here? I'm a guy who wandered in off the street.
I'm a blogger, so I don't really like get into predicates for legitimacy.
Oh, okay.
Brian Cook from MGO Blog.
Hello.
Brian, how you doing?
I'm good.
So, guys, when we last were here, we talked about Michigan. We're going to get into some Michigan hockey as well because it's one of the things we talked about. But we talked about the struggles for this team offensively. And you looked at that Illinois game, and that Michigan had opportunities despite their offensive struggles in that contest. If they can make a free throw, maybe it's different. they wound up losing a very winnable game, and then after that, wound up losing in the process, they lost Isaiah Livers for however many more games, and then after that, they lost their captain for at least a game. Maybe two, who knows how many they're going to be without X4.
I did see a couple of reports on Twitter from reporters that Michigan confirmed it was a one-game suspension. So
they did, after the press conference.
I haven't seen that.
That's what I just saw on someone directly tweeted that on the beat. So we'll see. I don't know if that's...
I would be interested to know if that was before or after the presser, because he was pretty non-committal about the length of the suspension.
Okay.
So,
well, we'll see, I guess, coming up. Yeah, it was someone tweeted out, "Why am I watching this MAC game during the Nebraska game?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's not far off." Because I mean, I don't want to, you know, diss CJ Baird, but you know, he's a walk-on. He was a one rebound away from an $8 trillion. it just feels a lot different watching a basketball game with guys like that on the court for 8 minutes and all of Nebraska's guys, basically. It's just,
that's Nebraska's team.
I mean, that's Nebraska's team. Yeah. Like their center, who's like 17 years old. Yeah. And it's a bit of a come down. I think we knew this going into the season, is that Michigan had 6, 7, 8 guys, and past that, there was very little.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't lose Livers, you can't lose Simpson. Michigan was able to pick it up and win that game because Eli Brooks had a nice game, and Franz Wagner is increasingly active inside the line.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is good because he's... A good thing.
Yeah, and I still, and I talked about this earlier in the week. Look, I know that people maybe look at his performance thus far and say, ah, he's overrated as a shooter. Let's remember two things. One, he's a freshman.
Yeah.
Two, a freshman that got a late start because of a broken wrist.
I mean, so. I actually went back and I looked at his numbers in Europe last year, and he had like 153s that he canned at a 38% rate at the FIBA line, and he was a 90% free throw shooter in like 65 attempts. So that's, I think that's probably closer to his real level,
right?
Because free throw shooting is pretty correlated with your ability to hit threes. So I think that whatever is going on with him right now is something that will eventually get fixed.
Which is why, Craig, when I looked at his shot chart, which wasn't great against Illinois, I mean, Michigan didn't shoot great from three as a team, to say the least. And your three-point shooters in Franz Wagner and Eli Brooks, they combined in that game from three-point range to go, let's see, so Franz was 1 of 6.
I think they were 2 of 12.
Yeah, and Eli Brooks in that game, I have to pull it off, I'll get the list. But yeah, I think you're right. I think they're about 2 of 12. Yeah.
And about 10 of those looks were...
We're good. We're decent.
Most of the looks in that game were good. Meanwhile, I thought in the Illinois game that Michigan played pretty good defense, all in all. And if you look at the Illinois shots, they're mostly awful. And
I mean, you've got Don Sunmu hitting 2 or 3 threes.
Yeah, he's like a 29% guy.
Yeah, you got Frazier hitting 2 from 30 feet.
Yeah.
You know, Kofi Coburn probably had some bad luck on his shots at the rim, but he didn't really score at all.
Yeah, they did a good job on Coburn. He wasn't really a factor.
And then Io's just canning like long jumper after long jumper, and you're just like,
yeah.
I looked this up. Since Big Ten play resumed, Michigan is 322nd in the country at shooting threes. And they're 322nd at their opponent shooting threes. And those are pretty much the least controllable things you have as an offense or a defense. The only thing that's less controllable for a defense is opponent free throws.
Yeah.
For an obvious reason. Mm-hmm. So,
and that ain't very good either.
Now, this isn't a great team, but this is a team that probably should be 500 in the Big Ten, not worried about its bid. And I think that a large portion of what's happened is just attributable to luck. I mean, Michigan, they play Nebraska, and that's a game for 30 minutes because Nebraska's shooting 54% from three for 30 minutes. And not on good looks, like off the dribble jacks from guys who shoot 29%. I'm just like, we need to find whoever's running the luck and like have a talking to with them and be like, hey, come on.
Right.
Yeah, the randomness has really hurt Michigan. I mean, again, I felt in Illinois they played a pretty good defensive game. I mean, they lost that game because they missed five free throws in the front end of a 1-1, and those things weren't even close. Free throws weren't even close. They were awful. Go ahead, Brian.
And you have like Io going off on shots away from the rim, like, which is not really his game. So I think that there's been a lot of just
randomness.
Yeah.
I looked at, we were talking about 3-point shooting, and it actually the other 1 for 6 in the game was from John Teske, and talking about 3-point range in that Illinois game. And so when we talk about Franz's 3-point shooting percentage not being very good, I continue to say let him shoot him.
Oh, yeah.
You want him to be aggressive going to the rim against Nebraska. Don't know how much that really translates against, like, you know, to other teams. But it was good to see him attacking the rim. But I want him to keep shooting threes. John Teske?
Yeah.
Fewer.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a baseline for Teske's performance, right?
3.5 years, right, yeah. Exactly.
And we like the baseline for Franz's performance is still, like, you know, at worst, he should be a 35% shooter. So he's a guy who I think is going to be better than that down the road. So he's got to keep shooting. And also, I mean, in this Nebraska game, they got him opportunities to go to the rim because he's such a willing shooter. So they go hand in hand. And, you know, the thing about him is when he gets to the rim, like his length, the qualitative difference between like what the shot feels like between him and like, say, Brooks or DDJ, it's just like, that should be a basket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when he misses, it's like, ah. And then when DDJ hits something, it's like, wow, that was a tough floater, because all of his shots are tough.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's anything that we can do as a team to get Franz Wagner more involved in the offense, I think will help Michigan.
I tend to agree with that. And your point about him shooting threes, making it a little easier for him to attack the basket, is right. You know, Teske, I was happy he took no threes.
I was too.
And in the Nebraska game, if you look on his season, and I mean, he's such an effective inside guy. I mean, he's shooting 63% from two and 28% from three. So that's about a half point a shot difference. And nobody's running out at Teske when he's shooting a three, so he's not going to be able to take it to the glass. So you gain very little from that, except getting him away from the glass, which you don't want anyway. And he's not Bill Laimbeer.
Yeah, I mean, so, and one play that got me, I mentioned this on Monday after the game, he shot a three and got beat down the floor in transition. I was like, dude, come on. Yeah. And so, but I liked his game versus Nebraska.
Oh, I did too. I thought he played very well.
For a couple of reasons. Number one, I mean, you gotta go against Nebraska in the paint. I mean,
he only had three shots in the first half.
Yeah, but you gotta be, and it obviously wasn't just Teske. I mean, Brandon Johns in the paint. The point was, you gotta attack them down low, and Michigan did that. But I just feel like for a team that is searching for other offensive options, other ways to generate offense, not just from the guy who has the ball, but create offense for others. If it's not X, who's creating on this team consistently? I feel that's why I feel like, at least to explore it, running offense through Teske, because he has shown himself to be a competent passer.
Absolutely the right point. I mean, when you get the ball to Teske, either in the high post or the low post, he's pretty careful with the ball. He doesn't turn it over a lot, but he still sees the court reasonably well. In the Nebraska game, he made several good passes that's also the best three, Brian. The best three is the inside out three.
So, I mean, I thought Michigan went to Johns early in the second half, and they put him on the block a bunch and had him pose up. And I thought that was kind of a reaction to what felt like Teske being excessively passive.
In the first half, he's only got three shot attempts.
Yeah. First of those come up pretty quickly.
I don't agree.
They start doubling him, and he passes out of the post a little bit. I would have to ask.
I'm not saying you're wrong. Yeah. I'm saying I don't know.
I don't agree with that take. I mean, I thought that Teske, I watched the game in slow motion late last night, and I thought that he did a really nice job with balls that came into the paint.
Yeah,
mostly made good decisions on kicking it to the wing.
I kind of felt like there were points at which he was committing to the pass too early, and that was kind of bogging down Michigan's offense, particularly late in the first half. And things did get, like, I think he had a talking to at halftime, and like it was better after
and
that.
You know, there was one point, so the turnover that he threw, Juwan kind of got on him a bit. It seemed like about that. So maybe it was, you know,
that was the pass. He turned to his left, and there was a guy wide open in the corner. When I saw that, I thought he made absolutely the right play.
I'm not saying, and
I didn't even see the guy come back with his hand. But I don't even know
what Juwan was upset about. Yeah. I just assumed, coming off of that play, maybe he just wanted him to, hey, man, I want you to go up strong with the – I want you to –
It was a turnover, but I thought when I was watching that live, I thought that's the right pass. Yeah. And the guy just got a hand in the passing lane that I didn't see the guy come back either. So, I mean, I thought actually Teske had a good game. I thought
it was a good game overall.
I thought, Johns had a really nice game. And so it was okay. I mean, the problem, of course, is that a couple of those Nebraska guys were playing on my Thursday night league.
Right, exactly.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, you got to qualify all your takeaways from that game saying it was Nebraska.
Yes.
I mean, how much of this can you really take? And I tweeted this after the game. Look, I know it was Nebraska. I know that you aren't going to find anyone nearly as any other pushovers like this. I mean, at one point, Fred Hoiberg said they're disinterested in defense. I mean, he said that about his own team.
Yeah.
So you aren't going to find that up and down this league. I just hope that they found confidence in the success that they had in the, you know, in the post, and at least enough to try it more going forward.
Yeah, I mean, it's to be honest, I mean, there's I guess the question for me is, can this team actually win many more games? And if you look at their schedule, I mean, without Livers and X, I don't think so. Yeah. I think maybe two or three, that would be about it. They got Nebraska at home, maybe Northwestern on the road. Now you're searching and scrounging for games they can actually win with a five-guy rotation and no real bench. You know, I don't understand.
I thought that's what you wanted.
Well,
I thought Craig was just describing his dream scenario.
My dream scenario is five guys named like Bird and Jordan and Magic. Those teams, those guys I don't take off the court, right? Not, you know, I don't take those guys off the court for me. And the, I don't know. I don't know where we're at. You know, the question for me, and it is for a lot of people who ask me, is, you know, what's with Cole Bajema? You know, the 30 minutes he played have not been that bad. I mean, he's, I think, 2 of 4 from 3, 5 of 5 from 2. And he doesn't look like a great defender, but he didn't look like a complete debacle. And so what's,
yeah,
I mean.
Tim and I talked about this on the podcast. One thing I have to check into, and I admit I haven't done it.
Is whether he's eligible.
Yeah, is there a redshirt possibility still alive for him?
Yeah, I mean, he got in on at the last second against Michigan State, and I think that would, because I'm not sure if it's the same as in football or not, but Jordan Bohannon shut his season down after the Iowa State game in like December, mm-hmm. and that was his, like, that was the cutoff. And I don't know if that's because he played every game before that, or if it's like football where you could get six games and if he only played in four of them.
Yeah, you know, he didn't even register a minute in that Michigan State game. It made me wonder. It's like, yeah, was he supposed to put a minute in that game?
I don't know.
I got to check on that. But
if they're redshirting him, great. I mean, he's played in seven games.
The point is a good one, though. Not because I know what's going on in practice, right. And I know that he's practicing better than guys that are playing in front of him. I don't know that. I assume that that's right, that the guys that are playing in front of him are practicing better. They are playing better in practice. Sure. But we can say that some of the guys playing in front of him, there's impossible for him to be worse. It's impossible for him to be worse than how they've played. So why not give him a shot?
Especially when the 30 minutes he's played in the seven games have been pretty decent. I mean, at least plausible. And so sometimes people, I mean, there's a lot of players who play great in practice and it doesn't translate in games.
And then when it's a young guy, the mistakes they make, the errors in games can be a part of their growth.
Yeah,
you know, their mistakes are functional. So we'll see. I got to dig into that one. I admittedly haven't done so yet.
Well,
but I will
nobody
now.
In the media wants to ask the question, and I was going to last week, and then I got derailed by Tom Weirott. But the nothing. I got distracted. So,
oh, gotcha.
You know, it was nothing about Tom or just so.
Gotcha. And going to switch gears and go in a direction we haven't gone in quite some time. We're going to talk some Michigan hockey with the MGO Blog Roundtable here on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA in the month of January. Fortune seemed to have turned a bit to the point where Craig Ross said, man, we got to talk some Michigan hockey.
Yeah, they've come back from the dead. This team looked like they were going nowhere. They were unlucky. They were losing a ton of one-goal games. But part of that is they just really don't have any. They certainly have no high-end scorer, and they have really no one on this team who really can score. But they were getting phenomenal goaltending from Strauss Mann, who's sixth in the country in save percentage and really near the top, and is allowing 1.9 goals per game, which is phenomenal.
So was that – so, guys, tell me, because I know you follow recruiting, was he a heralded guy coming in? Is this performance unexpected?
You never really know with goalies, but Mann was coming off two – like 930 plus years in the USHL, which is the best feeder league. So he had some indications that he would be a good player. and then last year he's alternating with Levine and can't get over 900. He's like an 890 guy last year. But you have to account for the fact that Quinn Hughes was pretty irresponsible. Great player, NHL All-Star, going to have a long time in the league. But sometimes guys at that level don't like respect the structure of your team, and Hughes is very much like that. So there's so many fewer breakaways and odd man rushes this year that the quality of shot he's facing is much, much better because the team is more defensively sound.
Yeah, I mean, we're not seeing – it's been really rare. I've seen most of the games, and it's rare for them to be giving up odd man rushes, which was not so true
not the case last year.
And they are sort of sound, and so you have to give Mel credit. He's put together a team that's sound. And if you look at the goals scored versus goals allowed, it's 61-49 on the year, which should mean that they're winning at about a 56% clip, and instead they're 10-11-3. But they did beat Notre Dame twice on the road this month. They beat Penn State, and then they won.
They tied them.
Yeah, it's a tie for the NCAA. They got 2 out of 3 points in the Big Ten because they won in the 3-on-3 portion of the Big Ten overtimes. So their formal record is 10-11-3, but they were a lot worse than that. And they got a walk-on Granowitz, who's no superstar, but has been pretty solid and has helped them a bit, has scored some.
So the thing that I think has helped them a lot is Johnny Beecher, who's first-round pick of the Bruins. Often you'll see guys kind of, they're big, they're coming from the USHL, they're touted, and they kind of have a middling first half of their freshman season, and then they kind of take off in the second half. I think Beecher's about to do that. He's 6'4", and he flies around the ice, and just stuff that you can't teach he's got, and he's starting to really create some chances. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing I think has helped is Will Lockwood, who should be the star of this team, has really started playing like he could be. So Lockwood has had a star-crossed career where as soon as he starts playing well, he gets injured. And for whatever reason, he didn't have a whole lot of jump in the first half of the season, and he seemed like a different player after the break.
Yeah, I agree. I also think Cam York, who's a good freshman defenseman, has improved. And so it's trending the right way, but we'll see. I mean, they play Ohio State this weekend for 2 games.
Yeah, so they have a tough road to get to a spot where they're going to make the tournament. So
but that's what you expected, though, right?
Well, I mean, they dug themselves a hole. So they have 10 regular season games left. They're going to have at least 2 games in the Big Ten tournament, maybe up to 4 or 5. And they need to win 9 of those games to have a shot. And they still got to get lucky.
So what did you think heading into the season?
Heading into the season, you're hoping they're bubble in. And so what you'd like to see is you'd like to see them like be a couple more games above 500. I mean, Craig mentioned the fact that based just on Pythagorean goals, they should have a couple more wins. The other thing that jumped out to me when I was looking at their stats is their shooting percentage is 5.9.
Yeah, it's about the bottom in the country.
It's
in the
50s. Must be because it's like...
Yeah, it's 54. I checked it.
Okay, you checked it. Oh, thank you. that is probably... I mean, a portion of it is the fact they don't have Kyle Connor on the roster. Like, they don't have a sniper. But, you know, back in 2017, the same team had their 3 leading scorers were Winbor, who can't get a game, Slaker, and Lockwood. And those 3 guys are still on the team. And in 2017, when they were a terrible team, Michigan shot 7.9%. This year, they're shooting 5.9%. That's 10 even strength goals. If you just get them back to that like level, that's pretty bad as a shooting percentage. They go from 38th in the country in scoring to 23rd, and that's going to be worth a couple wins, 3 wins here and there. So look. You can make a case that, like the basketball team, there's some snake bit in their season. The other part of it is, like, so Red had kind of an extended denouement to his career, mm-hmm. and that hurt recruiting, and the recruiting timelines in hockey are so extended that, you know, it really starts to hit home this year when the sophomore class has nobody who's drafted in it. Its best forward is probably Garrett Van Wy, who I love, but Garrett Van Wy is, like, a great fourth liner. He was going to go to Army before Bill McCault, who was his USHL coach, kind of picked him off. Sophomore class is where you're going to have, you know, your first round pick, your late first round pick, who's really blowing up. The guy who scored a lot in junior had a kind of a rough freshman season, who established himself as a scoring line player. And this is not really happening for anybody in that class. So Michigan has been recruiting extraordinarily well.
Yeah, that's the direction I wanted to go in with you guys, is that was the talk.
Yeah.
When Mel was brought in, is that, okay, you're about to see a recruiting surge now. He is going to get the talent level back to where we were accustomed to seeing it be. Are you seeing the signs of that now?
Yeah. Well, so he picks up York and Beecher. Those are both, like, his recruits. And by the time he was hired, like, Beecher was probably the last uncommitted guy on the national team. So, like, the situation he was put in, he's done very well in this freshman class. And then if you look at the guys who are slated to come in next year, you have Owen Power, who's probably going to be a top half of the first-round pick in 2021.
He's 6'5 defenseman.
He's a 6'5 defenseman. He's a top-scoring defenseman in the USHL. You have Kent Johnson, who's also a 2021 NHL draft prospect, who's being touted as a top-10 guy, who is the leading scorer in the BCHL by about 30 points. That's a lot. You have Brendan Brisson, who's might be a first-round player, and you have Thomas Bordalo, who's on the national team, and I just saw him in the exhibition. I love him.
Yeah, and the nice part about Bordalo is he's only about 5'9", which means he might hang around for a couple of years because the NHL. I mean, that's the same thing for Strauss Mann. He's shortish, so by what the NHL wants.
Well, he's also a goalie.
And he's a goalie, so we'll probably have him for two more years. And
Bordalo is their top center. Yeah. He's the son of an NHL player. He plays like it. I basically just watched him during that game. He had 3 assists against Michigan. All of them were excellent. He's a great passer. He's got great vision. He's on their top power play unit that they run through him on the half boards. He's also on their top penalty kill unit. And that says something about a 5'9 guy when it's like, we want you out there to all kill the penalties.
What about Truscott? He's a defenseman on the...
I didn't see much good or bad from Truscott in that game. He's projected as a late round pick. He should be a puck mover. You know, a guy who's capable with the puck on a stick. He's not going to be super dynamic, but he's a good player.
And then you got Martin Lapointe.
Yeah, Philippe Lapointe.
Martin Lapointe's son.
Yeah.
He's a guy who...
Red Wing and Bruin, right?
Yeah. He's on Kent Johnson's line in the BCHL, so he's scoring like 1.6 points a game, too. He is a year after his draft year, so it means less when you're an older guy in those leagues. I think he might be somewhere between Slaker and Andrew Kopp.
That'd be pretty good.
He's going to be a guy who could be a good third liner on a good team, could be, you know, the sixth guy on your scoring line. So
he does have assuming these guys show up and are here next year.
They're going to show up at this point. There's reason that you would defect to the OHL at this point because you'd be playing college hockey anyway.
So he has a nice class to go with
It's not a nice class. Yeah. This class has like the equivalent of five stars in it.
Okay.
So it's a great class.
It's a great class. Okay. You have four guys who are going to be first or early second round picks in the NHL draft. And then you have Eric Portillo, who's a 6'6" goalie out of Sweden who went in the third round last year. And then the other guys that they're bringing in look like they could be contributors as well. So
this is the kind of class that when they hire Bill, this is the kind of class he's going to get.
And then if you look at the next year, they have another couple first round picks committed. They're trying to get a guy named Adam Fantilli, who they took a commitment from his brother. Fantilli, they have new rules. He can't commit until August. But he moved from Canada to the States to be with his brother and play on the same team.
Speaking of brothers, what about the third Hughes brother? What's up with him?
He's committed, and he's going to be a top-10 pick in 2021. He's not going to come in this year. He'll come in next year. He's basically his brother. So,
which one?
Luke. He's a defenseman.
No, I mean, which?
Oh, Quinn. He's a defenseman. Yeah, yeah. So they've got dudes lined up down the road too. So the thing about you were talking about,
I didn't know if you meant he was Jack.
No, he's a defenseman and he's a little undersized, but he makes it work. So he's Quinn. You mentioned the Big Ten. The Big Ten has, like, Notre Dame is recruiting like crazy. Minnesota's recruiting like crazy. Wisconsin
last year had a... But they
I mean, Wisconsin has these guys on campus right now, and they're not winning at all. So it's not like a guarantee that Michigan is going to blow up. But
they're going to be better.
They're going to be better. So I feel like, you know, next year you're going to see them take a major step forward. And then the year after that, if they are able to retain some of these guys for a second year, which you should, then you're going to see Michigan kind of be back to what they used to be. So it's going to take a minute, but I'm encouraged by what you see coming down the pipe.
Me too. I mean, and this year in itself has been encouraging, the way they started so poorly and have come back the last month. So, and they're still in play. They're not out of, I mean, I know it's an uphill haul, but I think they're still in play for a chance for the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, so if they can go like 7-3 down the stretch and then win their first round series in the Big Ten tournament, they'd have a shot.
Yeah.
So it's not like crazy, but it is a pretty big ask for a team that struggles to score.
Yeah. Gotcha. Got WTK.com, since we're going off the reservation a little bit. You know, we had Eric Bakich on earlier.
Baseball,
in the show, and you know, coming off a World Series appearance, now they lost. I mean, the pitching staff was just, I mean, their guys, Tommy Henry, Carl Kaufman. Now you come back with Criswell.
They have Criswell, and don't they have Ben Dragani, who Dragani was their best starter 2 years ago?
He was. And,
I don't know what his health is.
Eric said he's healthy, but they have to
in there.
They have to build him back up. They have to build his pitch count up.
And they held
they
on
have
to Chris
weather
Fetter,
him.
Right?
They did. They did hold on to Chris Fetter.
Didn't
the Yankees come after him? Or?
Yeah.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. One of three. Eric said three teams to come after him. Ira said there were actually four teams that came after
the
Chris
The Diamondbacks Fetter. First, and he turned them down before they ever had a chance. And then he interviewed with the Yankees, he interviewed with the Giants, and the Mets showed interest as well.
You know, I feel like this is not a blip for Eric. I feel like he's got something. He's got a culture. He's got a guy who can help him develop pitchers.
Yeah.
And then we've seen this model that he's had where, you know, he had great success with Jordan Brewer and Jordan Wogu. Now you throw, you know, not say that Joey Velasquez is going to do anything this year. But you get another.
Is he not going to do anything this year?
I mean, he's going to be on the team, but he was just talking about how he's swimming right now. He's like he hasn't really done anything. And look at the guys he has in front of him.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to get. Think about this, Dom Clemente, who was
two years ago was phenomenal.
Yeah, he's like he was the last returning the Big hit. Ten's returning, you know, leader, hitting leader, and he's not anything on last year's team, other than, you know, a presence in the dugout, but he's back.
Yeah, I mean they actually have.
What happened to him?
He got hurt. He had struggled early in the season.
I think he said he had hernia surgery.
Yeah, and then Jimmy Kerr sort of had.
Jimmy Kerr blew up.
Blew up.
Yeah.
And so there wasn't really a spot for him. But yeah, I assume he'll. I mean, there's no reason to believe that he won't have a good year, and they still have a lot of other good position players.
Yeah.
R.J. Moten? Is that the
R.J. Moten. Yeah. I'll ask him about R.J. Moten another time.
He
but
can
yeah.
be a pinch runner at least.
R.J. Moten is an impressive athlete. Mm-hmm. And you can see how that would really, you know, that kind of athleticism on a baseball field, you're definitely calling him like a five-tool guy. I mean, he can run. He can. He's powerful. He has all the tools.
But, you know, aside from...
I don't know what kind of hitter he is. Yeah. So I shouldn't say that. But,
aside from Criswell and Dragani, I mean, Willie Weiss was, projected as a starter. They used him as a reliever last year, but he was a big-timer out of high school.
Now, Ira, you said he's working through some things. Through some things right now, right?
Yeah, Willie had a... he blew out his arm in some off-season thing. He had a pretty bad... It looked like a pretty major surgery that takes a few months to recover. He may be in a position where he sits the year out. And I don't know for sure, but it sounds like he may be sitting the year out.
But there are a couple of other kids who showed... young kids who showed freshmen last year who showed something on the mound who might transition over to starters this year. But
I mean, if But if Michigan finds another starter with Criswell, I mean, I don't know how Chris Fetter doesn't get snapped up by somebody, right? Yeah. Like,
yeah,
I don't want to get too used to it.
How you gotta you gotta maximize.
Yeah,
maximize him while he's here. Dragani, it looks like, feels like, if you can get him back to what he was, because that's who we were talking about. Like you said,
Dragani was their, I think was their number one starter coming into last year, and then he got hurt, and so with Dragani and Criswell, you've got a pretty good core. You're short a starter basically, and yeah. I think the Page kid Isaiah has Page. A really good chance. There's a couple other kids who I think have good chances. Plus, there's a couple freshmen who had pretty good careers. So in high school. So I'm optimistic that this will be. You can't predict last year onto this one. That was unbelievable. Yeah, well, on the other hand, they should be a really competitive team and one of the better teams in the Big Ten. At least.
I think that if Nam Clemente can round back into form. Not to say that, what they gain, what they gain in him will totally compensate for what they lose on the other side. Like, they're going to score that many more runs that it would take care of any pitching deficit they might be at. But certainly the loss of Jordan Brewer will have been mitigated by if Dom Clemente can be what he was before he was out with injury, because that's a big loss. Not that we knew that heading into the year. That's another thing Eric pointed out. He said, this guy, who knew? He wasn't a starter to start the season last year.
It was a late scratch first game, and then he never basically sat again.
Right, and he winds up being a Big Ten player of the year. So, I mean, and that, who knows? Maybe there's another guy like that on this roster.
Yeah, I think they're going to hit the ball this year. I mean, I think they're good at catcher for a second, short. Well,
the most interesting thing about what they did last year is they were so aggressive on the base paths, which is, there's a big difference between pro and
college,
because guys are still as fast, but the catcher's quality is just not at that level.
Right.
So it just felt like a really smart way to exploit kind of the metagame for Michigan to have a lot of fast guys on the team, and I think a lot of those guys are back.
Yeah.
And the philosophy is still there too.
Yeah. Irish shaking his head.
Yeah, I'm nodding because the aggressiveness in the base paths is one of my favorite things about Eric, because it's just fun to watch those guys when they're out there, because they're going to turn a single into maybe a triple and then need a sac fly to score the run, kind of a thing. Yeah, I expect that. I think that they're going to be pretty solid. Criswell's going to lead that rotation, and they're going to be really good. You heard him talk about Hadjer, who they thought was going to be the guy over Willie last year.
Now,
to
what
be
was
one
his
of the main
injury?
Guys. He tore his ACL playing pickup basketball in January a year ago.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He said he was doing
some crazy dunk. Yeah, some crazy dunk. But the story that I heard was that during warm-ups, I think it was Isaiah Page's game at the College World Series, and Chris Fetter put his arm around Hadjer and said, "That's you next year." As he's warming up for a championship, the championship series for the College World Series, they had those kind of expectations for him on the mound. And then Dragani comes back. So you have, plus Isaiah Page, you have 3, 4, 5 guys that could be top line starters for the team. So the pitching should be pretty good. They should be fun this year again.
Well, a guy who's always fun is on the line with us right now. People always ask, what's up with Jake?